So I'm going to speak in English tonight, and yeah, אפשרות לקבל תרגום אחרי השיחה עם בטל בחדר תה, מישהו צריך, נכון? חדר אוכל. So, excuse me. So these talks, every evening there's a talk in the retreat, and the purpose is to get familiar with some of the teachings, which are huge, vast teachings. Not only they can help us in our daily life, they can help us in the retreat, they can help us with our moment-by-moment experience, and perhaps they can give us a certain vision if we're close to or a little bit touching the sources of what we're doing. It can give us a vision of an authentic spiritual path, something rooted in an ancient and very wide and very deep teaching. So the topic tonight is effort and goals, matarot, ma'amat. It's very obvious by now that we do need effort, and many of us sitting here so quietly, but I'm sure we're sitting like swans. You know that swans look barbarim, they look so quiet, and under the surface they're just going like this to keep steady. And I'm sure many of us are like that, and we're sitting quietly, and underneath we are paddling like crazy. And at the end of the day of doing nothing, we feel quite exhausted. Because it is effort that we do. It is a training. It needs effort. And I mentioned yesterday the teaching that there's something in us very pure and very clean, which the tradition calls the baby Buddha, the embryo Buddha. But for this to be born, it needs dedication. It needs effort to give birth to the baby Buddha. And there is a comment by Ramana Maharshi who said, awakening is not our right. It's not our right. Lo zchut shelanu. We have it in us, but it only appears when we put effort. We put persistent effort. The Dhammapada says, sustained effort and sincerity and discipline makes us like islands which no flood can overwhelm. So this effort can sometimes get quite extreme. I once heard a talk by Harada Roshi, a very fierce Zen monk, Zen teacher from Japan. And someone once asked him, I get up in the morning, I do meditation on Kabbalah, I do a little bit of Vipassana, I do some Qigong, then I do this, then I do that. Is that good? And Harada Roshi said, it doesn't matter what you do, as long as you do it as if your life depends on it. And there's something here very wise, because indeed the effort and the direction and the persistence is what brings the fruit, and the technique is actually less important. Even though at the beginning we may want to know what I'm supposed to do here, for hours and hours and hours and hours and hours. But in fact, it's the effort as one important component that brings the results. But Harada Roshi also went to extremes, and there are reports of his Zen students getting frostbite in the winter because they sit there 10 degrees minus and he throws all the windows open. And there's no air conditioning like here that we worry a little bit, is it a bit hot, a bit cold, a bit hot, a bit cold. There it's 10 degrees minus and the windows are open. No air conditioning, no heating. And your feet drop off. So the effort has to be understood. Effort is needed, but it can be very unbalanced. And we all, at the beginning, find this issue quite difficult. And I'm sure there's some of us here who feel that we have to work. This is a special opportunity of only 4 days, and we just have to work. We grit our teeth and get into it and struggle and push. And another and 6 breaths, 8 breaths, 10 breaths, wow, 15 breaths, wow, driving the engine. And striving, struggling, pushing, no pain, no gain, this kind of attitude can be a bit unbalanced. And the reason is that it creates in us a kind of success or failure mind, a mindset of success or failure. I got it, I didn't get it. I succeeded, I failed. I failed, I'm no good, others are better than me. Obviously the guy next to me is better than me. I'm making it. No, I'm not making it. The comparing mind, in other words, it brings a kind of obsession with self, what I can do, what I cannot do, is succeeding, failing, a kind of self-centeredness. This is exactly what we want to try and get out of. So the success-failure mind pushes us back into ourself. And the problem is the framework that we've given the work. Effort, striving, pushing, results, now. Moshiach, achshav. But there is another kind of effort which is almost the opposite. Like, well, I'm here and everything's fine and I'll just sit and what will come will come. Maybe a breath will come or maybe will not. It's all a bit of an accident. I don't need to do anything. Anyway, there's many teachers that say, awakening is an accident. So I just sit here, I'll think about things, nothing to do really, and wait. And there is a kind of passivity in this, actually a lack of participation in our direct experience. It's like we stood back too much from engagement. We're not in gear with what it is we're trying to do. And this kind of is a spiritual laziness or distance. There are other kinds of unbalanced effort which we may find ourselves feeling. One is that it all has to be painful, that it's almost like a punishment. Like a bit like going to the dentist, that we really have to, we have something to do here. It is good for us. Everyone tells us that meditation is good for us, but it needs a bitter medicine. And I will take the pain, and I will expect the pain and kind of a feeling that the whole thing cannot be very pleasant, but it's my duty to do it. And we can really feel that. I have to do it. I have to do it. It's not pleasant. It's something like a bitter medicine. And there can be other kinds of heroic sorts of heroic energy or effort or discipline. So what is balanced? What is skillful effort? And here we come up with some kind of disputes almost in the tradition, because you'll find teachers, and many of you probably experience teachers that say, work, work, work for your salvation, work for your freedom, and push very hard, like Harada Roshi, and encourage the kind of heroic effort in us. And there are other teachers that say there's no effort to be made. There will be teachers that will support this view. There's no real effort to be made. Krishnamurti says truth frees us, not the effort to be free. Nisargadatta Maharaj, the great non-dual teacher, he says there is nothing to be gained. There is no effort needed. Just know that what exists is already it. In some way or other, you're already awake. Just be it. No effort, because effort implies me here, getting there. And again, we're back in the duality. And there's some teachers that are really rather concerned not to create more duality. We have enough duality. Our problem is we want to bring all the duality together. Me here, I want to get better. I want to be there. I want to be improved. I want to be free, creating this separation. I'm no good now, I want to be better. So the teachers who are very deeply in this non-dual teaching and say there's nothing, no effort needed. But I think that there is a middle way, as ever. There is a Shvil Zahav, a middle path. And actually, if you look at the teachings of the non-dual teachers like Nisargadatta Maharaj, Krishnamurti, Ramana Maharshi, and many others, they say no effort, but not one of them will say that it doesn't require a deep and steady persistence, hemshechiyut, persistence, all the time following the line, not stopping, not forgetting, seriousness, to be serious, to be ritsini. Nisargadatta Maharaj calls it earnestness, same as seriousness, to be serious about what you're doing, meaning to be there, to keep showing up, to keep steadily on the path. So they don't exactly say no effort at all, they say steadiness, they say keep going on the path, don't step off, keep going, be serious about what you're doing. The Buddha is a very good example, a very beautiful example, and maybe some of you know the legend of the Buddha, that after many, many years of deep tapas, deep asceticism, deep and intense struggle, in which the story goes he became like a bag of bones, only ate one rice grain every day. And there was a kind of competition between him and his friends to who can be the toughest, who can be the most ascetic, who can be the most extreme in asceticism. And then one day the Buddha was sitting, I guess he was more or less like a stick. He was sitting by the bank of the river, and along came a boat with a musician and a student. He came floating along the river, and he heard the musician and the student talking. And the student said to the musician, "How do you tune the sitar?" And the musician said, the teacher said, "Well, if it's too tight, the strings don't make a good sound. And if it's too loose, the strings don't make a good sound. So you have to tighten the string just right so as to make music." And I think this is a very good model for us. Firstly, because actually learning meditation is a bit more like learning music than anything else. It's a training to learn music. We can't expect it overnight. It's like learning a musical instrument, and it needs that kind of balanced effort. If you go charging at the piano, and you'll not learn it, and you'll end up hating it. If you're too lazy, you won't get to the piano practice. It's this middle effort of being right there with it, without too much struggle, without too much relaxation, not too tight, not too loose. So I want to talk a little bit about this. One of the nice images in the tradition is of a chicken sitting on eggs. And it's a really nice story. Someone asked the Buddha, "What is a real right effort?" And the Buddha says, "Look, like a chicken sitting on eggs, anagolit dogerit, the chicken says, 'Oh, I wish the chicks would come out. I want to hear their beaks on the shell. I want them to come out now. I don't want to sit here anymore. I want them to come out. No, no, no.' They won't come out. He has to sit there for 21 days, persistent, steady, sitting like a rock, until they're ready. And the Buddha said, that's the kind of energy or effort you need. You don't need extreme effort. You don't need to be a hero, but you have to sit there, like in Zen they say, sit like a mountain. Nothing can overcome you. As we heard in the Dhammapada, sit like an island. The flood will not take you away, but you have to sit there steady. And it's this quality of steadiness, of balanced, steady energy that we can bring to our practice, we can bring to this retreat. We have to show up. We have to come to the sittings. We have to keep ourselves on the ball. We have to keep watching the ball, like in football. You have to keep there. But we don't need heroic struggle. It doesn't help us so much to push, to get another breath and another breath. I remember when I was doing Goenka courses, I was busy trying to differentiate one finger from another finger, and the finger on this hand from the finger on that hand, and succeeding and failing for hours and hours and hours and hours. And there's something too pushy in that. But we do need to keep there. Keep sitting, keep steady, keep persistent, like a chicken sitting on the eggs, right there, not moving, being with what comes up. Being with presence, continuing, 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 and it's a continuation that brings the results. So what can help us to recruit energy? We sometimes feel tired, we sometimes feel, both in retreat and also in our life, we feel spiritually empty, we feel no energy for all of this. We begin to doubt that there is a spiritual path. We don't have the energy for it all. Where can we recruit energy? Where can we collect the energy from? And I think one of the places we can collect energy for this steadiness is in our goals, our aspirations. And it's a very important issue that each of us came here with a goal. Each of us came here with a certain purpose. Each of us came here with a certain intention. We may have forgotten it. But it's important to remember the intention. What is our motivation? In a light way, we can do this before every sitting. What is our motivation? Remember our motivation. Maybe you can ask yourself right now, each of you, ask yourself, what is really my motivation? And any answer you get is legitimate. There's no wrong answer to this question. Because whatever your life, in your life, brings you to sit here is right. It's okay. You don't have to be connected to some other people's motivation, like you read in the books of great spiritual goals. Your motivation may be, I'm exhausted, I'm stressed, I'm tired, I need space, I need a few days of peace and quiet. That's great. That's enough. But connect with it, because that motivation, that catching that motivation, is the feeling that will give you energy. And reconnecting with it here and there will help you. You may feel, I don't have a spiritual motivation, I just feel terribly miserable or sad. Something happened to me in my life. All I want is to come back to myself. I want to return to myself a bit. I want a little bit of peace, joy. Fine. Fine. You may have curiosity. It's a good motivation. You may have just heard about it and you're curious and you want to meet the kind of people that do this thing. You may even want the food. I'm only here for the beer. The famous British advert. I'm only here for the beer. And it's good to confirm this intention, to give it value. There's another story that I like from, it's a Sufi story about a slave market, and Joseph was being sold in the slave market in this story. And Joseph is, in the Sufi tradition, he's a symbol of the soul, of the purity inside us, the pure soul. He's very beautiful, and the Sufi tradition made him a symbol of the soul, pure being. And he's always in the slave market being sold, just like we tend to sell our pure being for money and life and success and doing and being busy. We sell him in the slave market. Anyway, the slave market was there, and Joseph was being sold for 10,000 gold pieces. And along came a little old lady, and she said, I want to buy him. And the slave merchant said, you can't possibly have enough money. I want a lot of money. Look at this man. He's beautiful. Only 10,000 gold pieces. So she said, no, I don't have 10,000 gold pieces. I have two red threads. Shnei chutim. That's what I have. And he said, well, you can't possibly imagine that you can buy Joseph with two red threads. And she said, I know I can't buy Joseph with two red threads. But I want it to be known that I bid for him. I make a bid. I put down my my piece, my coin, my what I have, I put. And it's a story of intention. I want it to be known, namely to myself. I want it to be known that I have intention, and this is what it is. Confirming my intention. It's like we walk, we make an intention. Even if it's something we do for ourselves, we make an intention. This gives us energy. This gives us motivation. This gives us a sense of purpose. The other place where we get energy and the right kind of energy is from awareness, from consciousness, from being aware. And here is a circle that if we have energy and steadiness, we become more awake. If we're more awake, we have more energy. So the awakening, even a little bit that we have, tends to help us to overcome blocks, habits, doubts and fears, issues that stop our energy. If we ask what it is that stops our energy, what is the machsomim, what's the barriers that make us either too energetic or too tired and lazy or not get up in the morning or, you know, lose energy, and I'm now talking about our life as well as this retreat. I'm now talking about in our spiritual journey, in our life. The machsomim, the barriers, are habits. And the habits are things like it's not worth, it's not happening, I can't do it, I have no confidence, judgment on self, or what Krishnamurti calls friction, resistance in the mind, resistance, all chikuch, all kinds of friction, like thinking about everything too much, like questioning everything too much, like comparing ourselves to other people, like no concentration, like full of regrets and issues in our life and complexities and stories that just stop us from putting effort. And as we clean these, and this is very much the process of vipassana, which we'll learn about during the retreat, as we clean slowly through awareness, through consciousness, the energy emerges. The energy comes by itself. And as it comes by itself, a lot of the motivation issues that we've had, they also become more purified or more, they change. So, for example, we come into the retreat because we're tired, exhausted, stressed, and we want a little bit of peace and relief. So after 2 or 3 days, through awareness, through knowing, through paying attention, we lose that motivation and another one comes, more deep, more subtle. So at the beginning it was, I want a little bit of peace and rest and quiet. After maybe 3-4 days, we suddenly see there's new possibilities. It's not just peace and quiet I need. Actually, my motivation has changed. Now I want to discover who I am. Now I want to discover something about myself. So you can see the motivation itself changes as a result of awareness and becomes more subtle, more delicate, more deep. So awareness is one of the components that can give us energy, that can renew our energy, removing blocks, removing complexes, removing fog and confusion, cutting through the voices in the mind that are always turning round and round and round and take our energy away. The awareness, clear awareness, concentration, steadiness, and process of vipassana, it clears away some of the rubbish. We put them in the rubbish bin and we find we have more energy. So energy can come through the practice, and it's good to notice it. And some of us may feel in the retreat in the first couple of days very tired, but be aware, because out can come at any time just that extra energy, that extra ability. It's not so difficult to get up and go to the hall. It's not so difficult, not so tiring anymore. And you can sometimes notice it. Slowly, slowly, the effort, the energy we put into practice can become more joyful. Joyful effort is a sign that we got it right, that we found this balance between too tight and too loose. The joy of energy, because we all have energy, we all use it every day, we're all running with it, we have tons of energy. Energy is not a problem, we have tons of it in our life. If we just consider what we do in one day, sometimes, especially in Israel, it's frightening. You have loads of energy. But do we have that balance where the energy and the effort is joyful, is easy, is right, not too tight, not too loose, not too ambitious, not too pushy, not too lazy, not too passive? The gears are joined. The engine is running smooth. The car is moving steady. That kind of joyful effort that is a sign that that the effort is right, is balanced. And the same in our life. Padmasambhava has a beautiful quotation. He's the great Tibetan sage. He says, keep your vision as high as the sky, but your actions carefully sieved, just like we sieve flour. Sieve your actions carefully, like the sanen. Sieve your actions carefully, just like you sieve flour. Keep your vision as high as the sky, but sieve your actions, watch your actions, very fine, just like you sieve flour, kemach. So, the final sentence, the image that I like for the right action, for the right energy, is of a flower that breaks the concrete. And we can feel ourselves, we don't need to be bulldozers, but we can be the flower that breaks the concrete. Perach that shover it up, beton. Thank you. So let's take a few minutes of quiet.